Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The Approaching Storm by Alan Dean Foster. Read for you by Alexander Adams. It seems to me that my planet is becoming very important, Honorable Shumai. The president of the Commerce Guild smiled thinly. Small keys can unlock very big doors, Senator Mosul. As they conversed, the dignified quartet strode slowly through the galaxy. Not the actual galaxy, of course, but an immense, intricately delineated, fully three-dimensional representation. It filled the entire private chamber. Stars glowed all around them, enveloping the strollers in a haze of soft, multi-hued refulgence. By reaching out and touching a planetary system, a visitor could summon forth a detailed, encyclopedic description of that system and its individual worlds. Everything from species and population to minute characteristics of flora and fauna, economic statistics, and future prospects. One of the strollers was a blue-skinned Twi'lek female who was quiet and contemplative of aspect. Her companion was a very important and readily recognizable Corellian industrialist. The president of the Commerce Guild was short and slender, greenish of skin, with the typical coiffure for females of the Gossam species, a rising, upswept tailing. The fourth member of the group, trailing elaborate robes woven from the most exotic materials to be found on his homeworld, was the senator from the world called Ancyon. Despite his high standing, he looked nervous, like someone afraid of being watched. As for the Twi'lek and the Corellian, they were clearly master and supplicant, though the second was a very powerful supplicant indeed. The president of the Commerce Guild halted. With a single expansive gesture, she encompassed shimmering pinpoints of light representing 1,000 worlds and more. Amazing, she thought, how trillions of sentient beings and entire civilizations could be reduced to mere specks hovering in a single room. If only the reality were as easy to organize and manage as was this efficient, luminous depiction. Given time and the assistance of carefully nurtured alliances, she reflected confidently, it would be.
Your forgiveness, noble lady, the Corellian murmured, but my associates and I also do not configure the importance of this world called Ancyon.
Shumai clapped her hands softly. Excellent. Among her three companions, confusion readily crossed species lines. You find it satisfying that we do not see this place's significance? The female Twi'lek asked.
Absolutely.
A tolerant grin creased the Gossam's face.
If you do not see it, then neither will our enemies. Pay attention, and I will do more than make it evident. I will make it visible.
Turning, she reached into the pulsing panoply of worlds and suns to pass the tips of the fingers of her right hand through a small but centrally located star. With words and gestures, she proceeded to manipulate the system she had singled out. In response to her actions, a trio of laser-bright blue lines appeared, linking the first system to three others. The Malarian Alliance. On the face of it, one of hundreds of such casual alliances. Her slim, deft fingers moved again. Yellow lines appeared, tying the first star to six additional systems.
Kaitumite Mutual Military Treaty. Never invoked, but still in force.
Her smile widened. She was enjoying herself.
Now, observe this.
Her hands proceeded to play with the surrounding galagraphics like a musician strumming an expensive quintolium. When at last Shumai finished, her three companions eyed her triumphant handiwork in silence. The four visitors were enclosed by a web of lines, straight and uncompromising, blue, yellow, gold, crimson, all the colors of the spectrum. Perhaps even, some dared to think,
the colors of an empire. And at the nexus of this web of intensely bright, unwavering lines that represented outstanding treaties and alliances, pacts and planetary partnerships, lay a single, suddenly far less insignificant world. Ancion. With a wave of one hand and a dismissive word from Shumai's lips, the elaborate network faded. It would not do to have someone not privy to the machinations of the group walk in unannounced and see what was being discussed. Awkward questions might ensue. Who would have suspected that a world such as this could lie at the center of so many interlocking treaties? The blue-skinned female was suitably impressed.
Precisely the point.
Shumai inclined her head slightly in the female's direction.
There are other worlds that occupy comparable positions of strategic importance. Worlds more heavily populated, thoroughly industrialized, and frequently mentioned as important players when the current unsettled state of affairs within the Republic is being discussed. In contrast, no one thinks to bring up Ancion. That is the beauty of it.
Steepling her fingers, she glanced significantly at Senator Mosul.
If we can get the Ancionians to commit to pulling out of the Republic, no one will really care. But because of their alliances, their withdrawal should be enough to sway their already vacillating partners in both the Malarian Alliance and the Chitomite Treaty to follow. You saw how many other systems are tied in turn to both of those pacts. The effect will be as of an avalanche, starting small, growing fast, and accelerating of its own accord. By the time the Senate knows what has hit it, 40 systems or more will have withdrawn from the Republic, and we will be well on our way to solidifying the kind of changes we wish to see come about.
Senator Mosul's fingers clenched tighter and tighter until whiteness showed beneath the skin.
That will be the spark that we need to propose the passage of extraordinary measures to cope with the emergency.
The Corellian industrialist was all but dancing with excitement.
It's wonderfully cunning, this plan you've devised. I know that the interests I represent will agree to send a force to Ancion immediately, to compel the inhabitants to withdraw from the Republic.
For an instant, Senator Mosul looked alarmed.
Which is exactly what we do not want them to do,
Shumai countered sternly.
As I seem to recall, the Trade Federation already tried something similar elsewhere. The results were, shall we say, somewhat less than triumphant.
Yes, well,
the Corellian coughed uncomfortably into one hand.
There were unforeseen complications.
That continue to resonate to this day.
Shumai was unrelenting in her tone.
Don't you see? The beauty of this plan is the seeming insignificance of its linchpin. Send a fleet or even a few ships to Ancion, and you will immediately attract the attention of those forces that continue to frustrate us. Obviously, that is the last thing we wish. We want the Ancionian withdrawal to appear wholly natural, the result of internal decisions reached in the absence of external influences.
She smiled benignly at Mosul.
Will it be?
The Twi'lek asked pointedly. Shumai eyed her approvingly. She would be useful, she knew, as would the others she had involved, if they could keep their wits about them. It was Senator Mosul's turn to respond.
Like so many peoples, the Ancionians are divided as to whether they should remain within the Republic or step outside the corruption and sleaze that permeate it. Rest assured that there are among its citizens those who are sympathetic to our cause. I have taken care and expended considerable political capital to ensure that these elements are appropriately encouraged.
How long?
The deceptively soft-voiced Twi'lek wanted to know.
Before Ancion decides?
The senator looked thoughtful.
Assuming the internal divisions continue to widen, I would expect a formal vote on whether to withdraw from the Republic within half a standard year.
The president of the Commerce Guild nodded approvingly.
At which point, we can look on with satisfaction as those who have been traditionally allied to Ancion follow suit, and those allied to the Allies fall in turn. Surely, as children, all of you played with blocks? There is invariably one key block near the bottom that, if removed, will cause the entire structure to collapse. Ancion is that key. Remove that one block, and the rest of these systems will crumble. Her thoughts, as well as her gaze, seemed to focus on something outside the range of vision of her associates.
On the ruins of the old, decrepit republic, those of us with foresight will build a new political structure, perfect and gleaming. One without any weak links, free of the moralistic waste that encumbers and slows the appropriate development of a truly advanced society.
And who will lead this new society? The female Twi'lek's voice was tinged with just a touch of cynicism. You?
Shumai shrugged modestly.
My interests lie with the Commerce Guild. Who can say? That is something yet to be determined, is it not? The cause must succeed before leaders can be chosen. While I admit I would not turn down such a nomination, I believe there are others who are more qualified. Let us begin with small things.
Like this Ancyon.
Having recovered from the previous mild reproach, the Corellian's enthusiasm had returned full strength.
What a pleasure it would be, what a wonderment, to at last be able to conduct business unencumbered by mountains of superfluous rules, regulations, and restrictions. Those I represent would be forever grateful.
Yes, you would at last have the chance to secure the restrictive monopolies you so devoutly seek, Shumai observed dryly. Don't worry. In return for your political and financial support, you and those you represent will receive everything they deserve.
Aja, sweet scent. What are you hiding under that big old robe?
Luminara unduly did not look up at the large, unshaven, rough-hewn, and unpleasantly fragrant man, or his equally coarse and malodorous companions. She treated their knowing grins, the eager forward tilt of their bodies, and their leering eyes with equal indifference, though their collective body odor was somewhat harder to ignore. Patiently, she raised the spoonful of hot stew to her lips, the lower of which was stained a permanent purplish black. A series of interlocking black diamonds tattooed her chin, while more intricate markings decorated the joints of her fingers. The olive color of her skin contrasted strikingly with the deep blue of her eyes. These rose to regard the younger woman who was seated on the other side of the table. Barriss Ophi's attention shifted between her teacher and the men crowding uncomfortably close around the two of them. Luminara smiled to herself. A good person was Barriss, observant and thoughtful, if occasionally impulsive. For now, the young woman held her peace, kept eating, and said nothing. A judicious reaction, the older woman knew. She's letting me take the lead, as she should. The man who had voiced the impropriety whispered something to one of his friends. There was a ripple of crude, unpleasant laughter. Leaning closer, he put a hand on Luminara's cloth-draped shoulder.
I asked you a question, darling. Now are you gonna show us what's under this lovely soft robe of yours? Or do you want us to take a peek ourselves?
An air of pheromone-charged expectation had gripped his companions. Huddled over their food, a few of the establishment's other diners turned to look, but none moved to voice outrage at what was happening or to interfere. Spoon pausing before her lips, Luminara seemed to devote greater contemplation to its contents than to the insistent query. With a sigh, she finally downed the spoonful of stew and reached down with her free right hand.
I suppose if you really want to see...
One of the men grinned broadly and nudged his hulking companion in the ribs. A couple of others crowded closer still, so that they were all but leaning over the table. Luminara pulled a portion of her outer robe aside, the intricate designs on the copper and bronze-colored metal bands that covered her upper forearms glinting in the diffuse light of the tavern. Beneath the robe was a metal and leather belt. Attached to the belt were several small and unexpectedly sophisticated examples of precision engineering. One of these was cylindrical, highly polished, and designed to fit comfortably in a closed hand. The aggressive spokesman for the group squinted at it, his expression slightly confused. Behind him, a couple of his heretofore hopeful cronies abandoned their leering expressions faster than a smuggler's ship making an emergency jump to hyperspace.
Mathos preserve us. That's a Jedi lightsaber.
Expressions falling like hard rain, the band of would-be aggressors began to back off, split up, and drift hurriedly away. Unexpectedly deserted, their erstwhile leader was unwilling to admit defeat so quickly. He stared at the gleaming metal cylinder.
Not a chance, no. A Jedi lightsaber, is it?
He glared belligerently at the suddenly enigmatic object of his attentions.
I suppose that would make you a Jedi Knight, Sweet Splash. A lovely lithe Jedi at that.
He snorted derisively.
Sure, and that's no Jedi lightsaber, is it? Is it?
He growled insistently when she failed to respond. Finishing another spoonful of her meal, Luminara Unduli carefully set the utensil down on her nearly empty plate, delicately patted both her decorated and her untouched lip with the supplied linen napkin, wiped her hands, and turned to face him. Blue eyes peered upward out of her fine-featured face, and she smiled coldly.
You know how to find out, she informed him softly.
Abruptly, the gruff intruder became aware of several things simultaneously. First, he was now completely alone. His formerly enthusiastic companions had slipped away one by one. Second, by this time, the woman seated before him was supposed to be anxious and afraid. Instead, she only looked bored and resigned. Third, he suddenly remembered that he had important business elsewhere.
Sorry, he found himself mumbling. Didn't mean to bother you. Case of mistaken identity. Was looking for someone else.
Turning, he hurried away from the table and toward the tavern's entrance, nearly tripping over a scraps bowl on the floor. Exhaling softly, Luminara turned back to the remnants of her meal. Making a face, she pushed the bowl and what remained of the meal away from her. The boorish intrusion had spoiled her appetite.
You handled that well, Master Luminara.
Barriss was finishing up her own food.
The Padawan's perception might occasionally be lacking, but never her readiness to eat.
No noise, no fuss. As you grow older, you'll find that you occasionally have to deal with an excess of testosterone, often on minor worlds like Ancyon.
She shook her head slowly.
I dislike such distractions.
Barriss smiled gaily.
Don't be so somber, Master. You can't do anything about physical attractiveness. Anyway, you've given them a story to tell, as well as a lesson.
Luminara shrugged.
If only those in charge of the local government, this so-called unity of community, were as easy to persuade to see reason. It will happen.
Barriss rose swiftly.
I'm finished.
Together, the two women paid for the meal and exited the establishment. Whispers, mutterings, and not a few awed words of admiration trailed in their wake.
The populace has heard we're here to try to cement a permanent peace between the city folk of the Unity and the Alwari nomads. They're unaware of the far greater issues at stake, and we can't reveal the real reason for our presence here without alerting those who would oppose us to the fact that we know of their deeper intentions.
Luminara drew her robe tighter around her. It was important to present as subdued yet impressive an appearance as possible.
Because we can't be completely honest, the locals don't trust us.
Barriss nodded.
The city people think we favor the nomads, and the nomads fear we're on the side of the city folk. I hate politics, Master Luminara.
One hand fell to her side.
I prefer settling differences with a lightsaber, much more straightforward.
Her pretty face radiated a zest for life. She had not yet lived long enough to become inured to the new.
It's difficult to persuade opposing sides of the rightness of your reasoning when they're both dead.
Turning up one of Kupanam's side streets, chaotic with traders and city folk of many different galactic species, Luminara spoke while scanning not only the avenue, but also the flanking walls of commercial and residential buildings.
Anyone can handle a weapon. Reason is much more difficult to wield. Remember that the next time you're tempted to settle an argument with a lightsaber. I bet it's all the fault of the scheming Trade Federation.
Yes, Luminara agreed,
and the Commerce Guilds. They grow more powerful by the month, always sticking their money-hungry fingers in where they're not wanted, even if their immediate interests are not directly involved. Here on Ancyon, they openly support the towns and cities that are loosely grouped together as the unity of community, even though the law of the Republic guarantees the rights of nomadic groups like the Alwari to remain independent of such external influences. Their activities here only complicate an already difficult situation.
They turned another corner,
as they do elsewhere.
Barriss nodded knowingly.
Everyone still remembers the Naboo incident. Why doesn't the Senate simply vote to reduce their trade concessions? That would settle them down a bit.
Luminara had to fight to keep from smiling. Ah, the innocence of youth. Barriss was well-meaning and a fine Padawan, but she was unsophisticated in the ways of governance. Luminara sank further into preoccupation. Barriss noted the change.
Something else troubles you, Master Luminara?
Stopping sharply, Luminara threw out a hand to halt her companion. Her eyes flicked rapidly from side to side, and she was suddenly no longer introspective. Her every nerve was alert, every sense on edge. Before Barriss could question the reason for the action, the Jedi had her lightsaber out, activated, and fully extended before her. Without moving her head, she raised it to a challenge position. Having drawn and activated her own weapon in response to her master's reaction, Barriss searched anxiously for the source of unease. Seeing nothing out of the ordinary, she glanced questioningly at her teacher, which was when the Hogus plunged from above to spit itself neatly on Luminara's upraised lightsaber. There was a brief stink of burning flesh. The Jedi extracted the beam, and the startled Hogus, its now useless killing axe locked in a powerful but lifeless grip, keeled over onto its side. The heavy body made a dull thump as it struck the ground. Back! Luminara started to retreat, the now anxious and alerted Barriss guarding her master's rear and flanks. The attackers swarmed down from rooftops and out of second-story windows, came bursting through doorways and up out of otherwise empty crates, a veritable flash flood of seedy infamy. Someone, Luminara mused grimly as she retreated, had gone to considerable trouble and expense to arrange this ambush. In the midst of genuine concern for herself and her Padawan, she had to admire the plotter's thoroughness. Whoever it was clearly knew they were dealing with more than a couple of female tourists out for a morning's sightseeing. The question was, how much did they know? In the crowded, active streets, the large number of attackers had gone undetected by Luminara, their inimical feelings submerged among those of the greater crowd. Now that the attack had begun, the force throbbed with an enmity that was out in the open. Dozens of well-armed hired assassins fought to get close enough to their rapidly withdrawing targets to deliver a few final fatal blows. Had they been tacticians, those in front swinging blades and other less advanced devices would have stepped aside to give their more heavily armed comrades room in which to take aim. But a reward had been promised to the ones who made the actual kill. While this served to inspire the truculent rabble, it also made them reluctant to cooperate with one another in achieving their ultimate objective, lest it be a colleague who claimed the substantial bonus. So it was that Luminara and Barriss were able to deflect bursts from lasers as well as blows struck by less technical weaponry such as long swords and knives. With high walls shielding them on either side and merchants and vendors continuing to run for cover, they had room in which to work. Bodies began to pile up in front of them, some intact, others missing significant portions of their anatomy, these having been neatly excised by whirling shafts of intensely colored energy. Barriss's exuberance and occasional shouted challenge were complemented by Luminara's steady, silently ferocious work. Then, just when the two women were on the verge of pushing the remaining attackers around a corner and back out into an open square where they could be more effectively scattered, a roar of anticipation rose above the fray as another 24 assassins arrived. This mélange of humans and aliens was better dressed, better armed, and tended to fight more as a unit than those who had preceded them. A tiring Luminara realized suddenly that the previous hard fighting had never been intended to kill them, but only to wear them out. Steeling herself and shouting encouragement to a visibly downcast Barriss, she once more found herself retreating back down the narrow street they had nearly succeeded in escaping. Drawing new courage from the arrival of fresh reinforcements, their surviving assailants redoubled their own attack. Jedi and Padawan were forced steadily backward. Then, there was no more backward. The side street dead-ended against a featureless courtyard wall. Barriss! Lightsaber whirling, Luminara indicated the reddish-colored barrier behind them. Go up! I'll follow! Dropping to his knees, a man clad in tough leathers took careful aim with a blaster. Luminara blocked both his shots before taking one hand briefly off the lightsaber to gesture in his direction. Like a living thing, the dangerous weapon flew out of his hands, startling him so badly he fell backward onto his butt. Protected by his fellow assassins, he did not panic like a common killer, but instead scrambled to recover the blaster. They couldn't keep this up forever, she knew. Up, I said. Luminara did not have to turn to sense the unyielding wall behind her. Varys hesitated. Master, you can cover me if I climb, but I can't do the same for you from the top of the wall. I'll be all right, Luminara assured her, even as she wondered how she was going to make the ascent without being cut down from behind. But her first concern was for her Padawan and not for herself. That's an order, Varys. Get up there. We have to get out of this confined space. Reluctantly, Varys took a last sweeping swing to clear the ground in front of her. Then she shut down her lightsaber, slipped it back onto her belt, pivoted, took a few steps, and leapt. The jump carried her partway up the wall, to which she clung like a spider. Finding seemingly invisible finger holds, she began to ascend. Below and behind her, Luminara single-handedly held back the entire surging throng of eager killers. Nearly at the top, Varys looked back and down. Luminara was not only holding off her own assailants, but had moved forward to ensure that none of those in the back would have time to take aim at the climbing Padawan. Varys hesitated. Master Luminara, there are too many. I can't protect you from up here. The Jedi turned to respond. As she did so, she failed to see or sense a small Throbe standing behind a much larger human. The Throbe's blaster was small, its aim wild, but the undeflected shot still managed to graze the woman in the umber robes. Luminara staggered.
Master!
Frantic, Varys debated whether to ascend the remaining distance to the top of the wall or disobey her master and drop back down to aid her. In the midst of her confusion, a subtle tremor ran through her mind. It was a disturbance in the Force, but one very different from anything they had experienced this dreadful morning. Was also surprisingly strong. Yelling encouragement, the two men plunged past on either side of Luminara. Neither was physically imposing, though one had a build suggestive of considerable future development. Lightsabers flashing, they fell in among the bewildered band of assassins, their weapons dealing out havoc in bantha-sized doses. To their credit, the attackers held their ground for another couple of moments. Then, their associates falling all around them, the survivors broke and fled. In less than a minute, the street was clear and the way back to the central square unobstructed. Letting go of the wall, Varys dropped the considerable distance to the ground to find herself facing an attractive young man who wore confidence like a handmade suit. Smiling cockily, he deactivated his lightsaber and regarded her appraisingly. I've been told that morning exercise is good for the soul as well as the body. Hello, Bera Sophie. Anakin Skywalker. Yes, I remember you from training. Automatically nodding her thanks, she hurried to her master's side. The other newcomer was already examining Luminara's blaster wound. It's not serious. Luminara pulled her garments closed rather more sharply than was necessary. You're early, Obi-Wan, she told her colleague. We weren't expecting you until the day after tomorrow. Our ship made good time. As the four emerged onto the square, Obi-Wan's gaze swept the open space. Presently, it was as void of inimical disturbance as was the Force. He allowed himself to relax slightly. Since we arrived early, we suspected there would be no one to meet us at the spaceport, so we decided to come looking for you. When you weren't at your stated residence, we decided to take a stroll to acquaint ourselves with the city. That's when I sensed the trouble. It drew us to you. Well, I certainly can't fault your timing. She smiled gratefully. It was the same intriguing smile that Obi-Wan remembered from working with her previously, framed as it was by its differently toned lips. The situation was becoming awkward. Awkward? Anakin declared. Why, if Master Obi-Wan and I hadn't... The look of disapproval the Jedi shot him was enough to destroy the observation in mid-sentence. Something I've been curious about ever since we were given this assignment. Varys moved a little farther away from her counterpart and closer to the two senior Jedi. Why are four of us needed here to deal with what seems to me to be nothing more than a minor dispute among the native sentients? Her impatience was palpable. Earlier, you spoke of greater issues. You remember our discussions, Luminara explained patiently. Well, the Alwari nomads think the Senate favors the city dwellers. The city folk are certain the galactic government will side with the nomads. Such perceptions of favoritism on the part of the Senate are dangerously close to persuading both groups that Ancion would be better off outside the Republic,
where internal disputes could be settled without outside interference. Their representative in the Senate appears to be leaning in that direction. There is also evidence to support the contention that off-world elements are stirring the pot, hoping to induce Ancyon to secede. It's only one world, and not a particularly important one at that, Barriss ventured. Luminara nodded slowly. True, but it's not Ancyon itself that is so critical. Through the multiplicity of pacts and alliances, it could pull other systems out of the Republic as well. Given the fluid complexity of the situation, the matter of shifting alliances, the possible presence of outside agitators, and the seriousness of the potential ramifications, it was felt that two pairs of negotiators would make a greater and more immediate impression on the situation than one. There was much more at stake here, Barriss found herself thinking, than a disagreement between city folk and nomads. But she couldn't question Luminara further about it, because Obi-Wan was speaking. Someone, or several someones, beyond Ancyon doesn't want these negotiations to succeed. They want Ancyon to secede from the Republic, with all the problematic consequences that would ensue. Obi-Wan squinted at the sky, which had begun to threaten rain. It would be useful to know who. Just then, thunder boomed overhead, and for some reason Barriss could not quite put a finger on. She was afraid it signified the approach of more than just rain. Ogamor was not happy. Walking as slowly as was acceptable down the high hallway of the boss band's quarters, he tried his best to ignore the sideways glances of busy servants, clerks, and workers scurrying to and fro. Though as the boss band's major domo he outranked them all, the lowliest among them exhibited more confidence and contentment than he. Be they good or bad, it was his job to report in person all major developments to Boss Band Soerg, the Hutt. Present news to be delivered being exceedingly unpleasant, Ogamor had spent much of the morning devoutly praying for the intercession of some fever-inducing, preferably highly contagious disease. Regrettably, both he and the Boss Band remained in perfect health. Turning a corner, he found himself standing before the entrance to the Boss Band's office and inner sanctum. A pair of heavily armed Yuzum flanked the doorway. They regarded him disdainfully, as though he were already flayed and dead. With a shrug, he announced himself via the comm unit. Might as well get it over with, he decided. Boss Band Soerg, the Hutt, was a grayish, heaving, flaccid lump of flesh and muscle only another Hutt could possibly find attractive. He had his back to the door and his hands folded in front of him, staring out the wide, polarized window that gave a sweeping view of Lower Cupernaum. Soerg heaved himself around, turning away from the window. The tiny automated custodial droids scurried to keep up with the movement, efficient if not enthusiastic at its assigned task of doing nothing but cleaning up after the hut's trail of slime and tailings. Hands clasped over his prodigious gut, the hut glowered down at Ogamor out of bulging, slitted eyes.
So, you failed.
Not I, Omnipotent One. Ogamor bowed as low as was feasible, given the proximity of Hutt slime. I hired only the best, those who were recommended to me. The failure was theirs, and that of those who recommended them. These unworthies I have already reprimanded. As for myself, I was, as always, nothing more than your humble facilitator. A hand gestured diffidently.
Those fools who failed were told they would be dealing with one Jedi and her Padawan. Not two. Jedi strength multiplies exponentially. Fighting one is like fighting two. Dealing with two more akin to trying to handle eight. Fighting eight!
A quiver sludged in visible ripples the length of the hut's flesh. Ogamor was duly impressed. Though he had never set eyes on one of the legendary Jedi in person, anything that could give Boss Band Soerg the shudders was something to be avoided.
The second pair was not supposed to arrive for another 2 days yet.
Soerg was muttering to himself now, the words rumbling up from that vast abyss of a belly like methane gas bubbling to the surface of a decomposing pond.
One would almost think they had sensed the confrontation to come and accelerated their arrival. This timing change is suspicious and must be brought to the attention of others.
What others? Ogamor inquired, and was immediately sorry he had done so.
Sower glared down at him.
Why do you want to know, underling?
I don't. Not really.
Ogamore tried to shrink down into his boots.
Better for you, believe me. You would quake at the very mention of certain names, certain organizations. Be content in your ignorance and your minor status.
Oh, I am your corpulence, I am.
Privately, he wished he knew who or what the boss man was talking about. The expectation of possible riches far outweighed any fear he might have felt.
You cannot imagine,
the hut added in dangerously low tones,
the extent of the repercussions if we fail to successfully carry out this contract. Those who have engaged us to carry out their wishes in this matter have a reputation for treating failure harshly, in ways that can only be imagined.
Ogamore had all too vivid an imagination.
I will do my best, as always, Boss Ben. Still, four Jedi...
2 Jedi and 2 Padawans,
Sower corrected him. He looked suddenly wistful, or at least as wistful as a hut could look.
Those pathetic malingerers you were forced to hire are all too typical of the quality available on outlying worlds such as Ancyon. What is needed for this kind of work is a real experienced professional, someone whose work and experience falls outside the boundaries of Republic legalese. A proper bounty hunter, for example. Unfortunately, none such is to be found on Ancyon.
He sat brooding for a long moment.
Slat, he finally exclaimed. There is one good thing to come out of this fiasco, anyway. Thanks to the efforts of the Jedi, there are few survivors to claim their pay.
Then, if you are done with me, O Great One, I have much work to do.
Ogamore started to back out of the room. The shipment of Tweer skins from Avaprine is due to arrive.
Not so fast.
Reluctantly, the Majordomo was obliged to pause in his retreat.
I expect you to keep on top of this, Ogamore. It's a wise merchant who misses no opportunity. This business of putting a stop to Jedi interference takes precedence over everything else, including the shipment of Tweer skins. I will expect regular reports. Whatever you need, requisition it, and I will provide the necessary authorization. These visitors must be stopped, or there will be consequences for all of us. Do I make myself perfectly clear?
Ogamore bowed low. Completely. The hut puffed up importantly, like a toad much afflicted with pride.
I always do.
To the greater edification of those of us who serve you, O most great and wise patron.
Having finally made good his flight from the room with rank and all body parts intact, Ogamore resolutely ignored the multi-species giggling that followed him as he headed for his own office. There was nothing to worry about, he told himself. It was no big deal. All he had to do to retain his employer's trust and appreciation was oversee the demise of 2 Jedi Knights and their wily Padawans. Why, any country ignoramus could perform such a task using only half a brain.
It didn't work.
Soerg slumped before the comm station. The hut had considerable respect for the small biped whose hologram he was addressing, not because of her personality, but because of Shumai's wide-ranging accomplishments in the field of commerce.
What happened?
The president of the Commerce Guild asked curtly.
The 2nd Jedi and his Padawan arrived earlier than expected and prevented the execution of the 1st.
Soerg leaned closer to the comm.
The information I was given was faulty. Many hirelings were lost.
He chuffed importantly.
I have incurred expenses.
Shumai was unforgiving.
Don't blame me for your failure. You were provided with the most up-to-date information available. Do you think tracking the movements of individual Jedi is like following a courtesan around a dance floor? They don't publicize their comings and goings, you know.
Her apprehension was clear.
Now I have to pass this disagreeable information along to another. What do you plan to do to rectify this miserable failure?
The matter is being pursued, The Jedi will not be allowed to prevent Ancion secession.
I would think the elimination of a couple of Jedi and their Padawans would be a simple matter.
It would, Soerg agreed, if I could get proper help. Can you not send me suitable individuals?
Shumai shook her head.
I am under strict instructions to avoid any action that might draw additional attention from the Jedi Council. Sending in off-world professionals is precisely the kind of action that would do so. Our friend would be hard-pressed to explain away such an action. You will have to make do with what you can hire locally. I was assured that you could. That is why you were engaged.
This is not an easy business,
Soerg complained bitterly. The president of the Commerce Guild leaned close to her hollow pickup so that her face filled the imager.
I will make you a deal, Hutt. Trade positions with me. I will take care of these meddlesome Jedi, and you come here and deal with the one to whom I must report.
Soerg thought about it, but not for very long. The Hutts had not achieved all that they had by being fools. Besides, there was always the possibility that if Shumai became too intemperate, too insistent, she could be bypassed. One could go over her head. Did Soerg want to do that? He was not at all certain he really wished to know who was backing the impatient Commerce Guild. Not on a personal level, anyway.
I sense agitation, anxiety, and outright hostility, Obi-Wan said.
Anakin trailing dutifully behind him, Obi-Wan led the way toward the municipal hall of the city of Kupernaum, where they were to meet formally for the first time with deputies of the Unity of Community, the loosely bound political entity that represented the scattered city-states of Ancion and was the closest thing the world they were visiting had to a recognizable planetary government. The same ersatz planetary government, he reminded himself, that was threatening to secede from the Republic, and as a consequence, possibly take dozens of other systems with it.
Luminara nodded. In other words, a bunch of nervous politicians.
She glanced over at Barriss.
There are certain constants that remain the same throughout the galaxy, my dear. The speed of light, the motion of muons, and the unwillingness of politicians to commit to anything that requires a leap of personal responsibility.
There was no need for guards or clerks to announce the visitors to the assembled representatives. They were expected. Seated at a long table cut from a single piece of purplish zelwood, seven delegates awaited them. Two were human, four indigenous Ancionian, and one Armalot. Luminara studied the Ancionians carefully. Slightly shorter on average than humans, the dominant native species of Ancion was much slimmer, wiry and lean, with skin a pale yellow that was almost golden. Both genders were hairless, except for a single startlingly dense brush of fur about 15 centimeters wide and 7 or 8 high that ran from the top of their foreheads all the way down their backs to terminate in a 15-centimeter long tail. The Ancionian who rose from behind the table gestured a formal local greeting. The other delegates, Luminara noted, did not rise.
I am Ranjin. Like my colleagues, a representative of the Unity of Ancion City and Town Dwellers.
Most Ancionians used only one name, she knew. His mane was dyed in alternating black and white stripes. He proceeded to introduce his fellow delegates. One did not have to be a master of the Force to note their wariness. When he had finished the introductions, he concluded,
We of the towns and cities welcome you, the representatives of the Jedi Council, to Ancion, and extend to you all the hospitality and cooperation of which we are capable.
Fine words, Anakin thought. Master Obi-Wan had spent much time trying to satisfy his Padawan's curiosity about politics. One of the first things a student of that odious subject learned was that words were among the cheaper currencies employed by politicians, and therefore one they felt free to spend lavishly. Meanwhile, Luminara was replying. She certainly was unusual for a Jedi, he thought. At least she was openly friendly and understanding, which was more than could be said for her by-the-book Padawan Barriss.
On behalf of the Jedi Council, Obi-Wan Kenobi and I, Luminara Unduli, thank you for ourselves and our Padawans, Anakin Skywalker and Barriss Ophi.
She and her companions took seats on the other side of the beautiful table, opposite their hosts.
In our capacity as representatives of the Jedi Council,
we have a proposition for you. If we can get the Alwari to agree to share dominion over half or more of the prairie lands they presently control, and to allow you to develop some of the resources that lie within those lands, will the people of the Unity agree to abide by the Republic law under which they have always lived, and to forget this dangerous talk of secession? At this unexpected and extraordinary offer, the delegates fell to murmuring among themselves. Their tone, their expressions, and their repressed excitement showed that they had not considered so sweeping a proposal before. While they caucused, Obi-Wan leaned over to whisper to his colleague. "You promise much, Luminara." She adjusted the thrown-back hood of her robe. "I spent a lot of time prior to arriving on this world studying the history of Ancion's peoples. Something extreme has to be done to break this local socio-political data jam. It's the only way to get these people thinking about something besides leaving the Republic." She smiled. "I thought laying out the possibility of a whole new vast commercial opportunity before them would shake them up a little." "Looks like you've certainly done that." Obi-Wan added that small, sly smile with which she was rapidly becoming familiar. "Of course, if they accept, you've put us in the awkward position of having to deliver." Luminara interrupted the exchange with a slight nod. The delegates had concluded their vigorous conversation and once more sat facing the visitors.
"No one doubts that obtaining the agreement of the Alwari to such an accord would radically change the social dynamic that exists here."
It was another Ansonian representative, a female named Inderon, who spoke.
"And if such a treaty could be achieved, it would certainly tilt the opinion of many of those who are presently inclined to favor secession from the Republic, because they believe remaining in it does nothing for them."
Her large convex eyes gazed unflinchingly at the Jedi.
"However, the likelihood of obtaining the hand of the Alwari to such an agreement, the majority of us find doubtful in the extreme."
Luminara and Obi-Wan rose simultaneously.
"You know our reputation," Obi-Wan said. "We have put it behind our words thousands of times before. This will be no different."
Official business concluded, visitors and delegates alike chatted amiably for another hour, both sides grateful for the chance to learn something more of one another off the record and on a personal level. While engaged in her own conversations, Luminara noted with admiration how Obi-Wan Kenobi put others at ease. For all his vaunted skills and experience, his was a personality others found non-threatening. His tone was understated, while his words fell on the ears of others as gently as a therapeutic massage. If only, she reflected, succeeding in their mission here could be reduced to a matter of choosing the right phrases. Unfortunately, she had been involved in too many disputes on too many unruly worlds to believe that the quandary of Ancion would be solved by shrewd words alone. Delegate Kanda, of the Unity of Community that represented the urban citizens of Ancion, waited uneasily in the dark passageway. Beyond the lights of Sangoquin Street, with its chanting vendors and night-strolling patrons, beckoned. Like all her big-eyed kind, she was comfortable moving about even on moonless nights. But in such a restricted defile, with only one way in and out, even a night-sighted Ancionian might be forgiven for wishing for a little more illumination.
"What have you for me?"
Though she recognized the voice immediately, the abruptness of it snapping unannounced out of the darkness startled her.
"What of the meeting between the visitors and the representatives of the Unity?"
"It went all too well."
She did not know the identity of the contact with whom she was speaking, much less his name. She could not even be sure it was a he. None of that mattered. What was important was that he paid handsomely, without delay, and in untraceable credits. She proceeded to describe the meeting in detail.
"So the Jedi intend to try to persuade the Alwari to allow exploration and development on up to half the traditional nomad prairie lands?"
Incredulous laughter echoed from the shadows.
"That would be something. They have no chance of doing so, of course."
"I would have thought so too," she whispered into the gloom, "until I met them myself."
The voice hesitated before responding.
"I must convey this information to my patron. He will know what to do."
Will he indeed, thought Kanda. Better him than me. All she had to do was deliver a report. She was glad her attempt to frustrate the Jedi's mission did not require that she go any farther.
Your payment will be deposited in the usual manner. The voice spoke offhandedly, clearly preoccupied with all that the Unity delegate had told him. As always, your good work is appreciated. When Ancyon at last stands outside the Republic and free of its interference, you will receive your just reward. Your unfairly appropriated family estates in Korumda will be restored to you.
I am your humble servant, Kanda replied politely.
Turning to leave, she hesitated.
What do you think your patron will do to try to stop these Jedi from succeeding in their task, now that the attempt at direct assassination has failed so ignobly?
No reply was forthcoming from the darkness. Having swirled his dust cape securely around him, Ogamur had already vanished into the night. Soerg was well pleased with the final plan that had been devised. It had been carefully thought out, honed, and refined until he could see nothing wrong with it. It possessed the twin virtues of simplicity and directness. He explained it assertively to Ogamur. His majordomo listened carefully. Only when the hut had finished did the Ancyonian timidly venture to comment.
It certainly sounds most promising.
Promising? The bossman rumbled. It's perfect.
He glowered down at the complacent biped.
Isn't it?
Well, the only obstacle I see lies in this ability of the Jedi to intuit danger coming their way, to sense trouble as a disturbance in the Force.
Soerg nodded, as much as one could who had no neck.
I'm all too aware of the cursed Jedi abilities. So, to carry out this plan, I have engaged two who are immune to such Jedi perceptiveness. Two of your own kind who possess unique qualifications.
Not to dispute your expertise, but how can any thinking, feeling sentience be impervious to Jedi acuity?
Meet them, Ogamur, and judge for yourself.
Looking off to one side, he clapped his large, flabby palms together and raised his voice.
Bulgan, Kyakta, come and meet my majordomo.
Expectant and curious, Ogamur turned toward the doorway that led from the bossman's audience chamber to a side waiting room. The aspect of the two Ancyonians who entered in response to Soerg's call did not fill him with overwhelming confidence. One had a ripped and ragged mane of splotchy auburn and a crudely fashioned artificial arm. The other was completely shorn from head to spine, bald and pallid of skin, with a patch over one eye and a back permanently bent from some incurable childhood disease. Neither was especially tall or strong. Together, Ogamur decided, the pair would have been hard-pressed to kidnap the offspring of an elderly water carrier. So astonished was he by the sight of the forlorn duo that, for a moment, he forgot his fear of his employer.
Bossman, you're going to send these two to capture a Jedi?
Not a Jedi, Ogamur. One of their padawans. With one of the two youths in our custody, the Jedi will be forced to parley.
He puffed himself up to his full, impressive, if loathsome, size.
We will demand they withdraw from all negotiations involving Ancyon's domestic and galactic disputations, and that no new Jedi come to take their place. Once they agree to that, they will be helpless to affect the outcome of the vote for secession. One Jedi's word binds all Jedi.
He all but rubbed his hands together.
This is even better than killing them. They will be forced to leave in disgrace and failure, with their tails tucked between their legs. At the same time, the Jedi Council will not rise up in rage against the deaths of several of their order. They will simply have been outmaneuvered and outthought by me.
He puffed up so much that Ogamur thought the hut might explode. Unfortunately, it remained nothing more than a wishful image.
Sometimes humiliation is more effective than death.
I do not disagree, Bossman.
Recovering some fortitude, Ogamur indicated the two proposed hostage-takers. The one called Kyakta was gaping open-mouthed at the room's luxurious furnishings, while his bent-backed companion Bulgan stood staring blankly at the floor, flagrantly picking his single nostril.
But seriously,
You are sending these two to overpower a Jedi Padawan?
Instead of roaring, Soerg held his patience.
Look at them, Ogamur. Take a good, close look. What do you see?
Clearly, the Hutt was enjoying his employee's bewilderment. Dubiously, and without getting any closer than was absolutely necessary, the Majordomo scrutinized the shiftless pair. Closer inspection did not produce encouragement.
At the risk of insulting your judgment, if not them, O Bossban, I would say that they appear to be slightly phallic, mentally deranged, addled.
Indeed they are. Just enough.
Looking hugely pleased with himself, as well as more than usually huge, Soerg leaned back on his tail.
In the course of carrying out research for my many business interests, I have discovered that even a minor mental illness is sometimes sufficient to confuse perception of the Force in those who are capable of it. Psychosis acts like a fogged piece of transparasteel, distorting but not completely hiding what lies beyond.
He gestured at his new hirelings. Bulgan smiled vacantly in response.
These two are indeed slightly mad. In their madness lies the secret of our success.
Enlightened, Ogamore eyed the pair with fresh interest, if not increased respect.
An audacious plan, to be sure, Bossban, but risky.
What risk?
Lumbering to his right, Soerg shoved a fist into a bowl filled with turgid liquid and fished out something the sight of which made Ogamore blanch. Unrepentant, the Hutt tilted back his head, dropped the noisome contents of his closed hand into his cavernous maw of a mouth, and swallowed noisily, smacking his lips by way of appreciation.
The risk falls entirely on these two cretins. If they fail, the Jedi will surely kill them.
And if they do not, but only wound and capture them? Artless as they are, they will surely tell the Jedi who hired them to attempt such a task.
Soerg's great belly heaved as he laughed.
Once they commence the operation, they are to report personally to me at prescribed intervals via closed-band comlink. Two nights ago, while they slept the sleep of the simple, I had my own physician install a small device in the neck of each. Should they fail to report,
he tapped one finger into an open greasy palm,
I will remotely activate the devices. Before they can give away any incriminating information, the very compact explosive charges contained within will separate their heads from their shoulders. Rather messily, I'm afraid.
What then, Great One?
Ogamore was curious to know. Soerg shrugged, fleshy ripples running in descending waves down his entire flaccid length.
Clanless imbeciles are cheap, even in Kupanam. If these two fail, we will try again with another pair.
Kiakta swirled the lightweight waterproof robes more tightly around him, the better to hide his face. They were the robes of a member of the Pangeus. That was not his clan. He and Bulgan were Tasbir, of the southern Hattagai. But it felt good to be back in clan gear, even if it was not his own, even if it had not been earned. The robes were necessary to allow them to blend in with the crowds that filled the bustling marketplace. Kiakta and Bulgan moved easily through the crowds, though Kiakta had to keep a close eye on his companion as they wended their way past one stall and shop after another. Innocent that he was, the bent-backed Bulgan had a disconcerting tendency to sample assorted wares without remembering that it was necessary to pay for them. They had no time for such nonsense today. They were on an important mission. Not as important as herding, or racing, or celebrating with one's clan, perhaps. But for two clanless ones, such as themselves, important enough. There they are, he whispered tersely as Bulgan bumped up behind him. The other strained to see out of his one good eye, straightening as much as he was able. Bulgan sniffed as he stared.
Got no guards, he noted observantly.
Bulgan was simple, but not quite so stupid as his outward appearance and attitude might suggest.
Kiakta withheld the majority of his contempt.
Of course they got no guards, dimwit. What need do Jedi have for guards? It is they who guard others.
Bulgan frowned, looked around in confusion.
What others?
Not bothering to reply and keeping his face hidden as much as possible, Kiakta saw that the visitors were unaccompanied by a local guide. The Jedi visitors acted like any group of tourists as they strolled through the marketplace, dutifully admiring the sights while occasionally pausing to taste samples of the local cuisine. Occasionally, one or two of them would pause to admire a handicraft or artwork, a neatly turned bracelet or glistening, singing plant from the equatorial regions. One of the Padawans stopped outside a shop that featured sanwiwood sculptures from the Nehru Plateau. The Nehru Alwari were famed for their woodwork. It was the young female, Kiakta noted.
Go inside,
he heard himself thinking urgently at the preoccupied Padawan.
Go on, go in. Admire the lovely pretties.
Next to him, Bulgan had gone silent, sensing that the moment might be near. In the midst of watching and waiting, Kiakta did remember to finger the homing device at his waist. After exchanging a few words with her equally youthful counterpart, the female Padawan entered. Her male colleague turned away and moved off, trailing the two older Jedi. The latter were locked in animated conversation. They appeared not to have noticed the momentary detour taken by one of their young apprentices.
Now, quickly!
Forcing himself not to break into an eye-attracting lope, Kiakta hurried forward. The winds of Wahor were with them. There was no one else in the shop. Only the proprietor, a wizened old city dweller who looked nearly as well-worn as some of her antique wood carvings. No other customers. Keeping their robes as tight about their faces as possible, the two newcomers pretended to examine a ritual high-backed Nazeh seat from Delgaron. The Padawan was slim and did not appear to be especially muscular. But then, Kiakta knew, Jedi did not depend on brute physical strength for their protection. Gesturing to Bulgan, he waited while his friend carefully unfolded the polis net from beneath his robe. When Bulgan was ready, Kiakta stepped up to the counter. Smiling patiently, the proprietress shuffled toward him. A last quick glance in the direction of the marketplace showed that the entryway remained clear. There was no sign of other visitors through the single large, transparent pane.
Welcome to my modest place of doing, sir.
Eyeing his robes, she added,
I see that you are Pangeus. You are a long way from your stretch of prairie, sir.
A hint of uncertainty crept into her voice.
Yet you do not have the look about you of one who is of the northern bands. I see no identifying tattoo on your forehead, and your mane is... But my body fragrance is of the Pangeus, he declared, interrupting her. See?
Pulling the compact atomizer from beneath his robe, he shoved it forward and sprayed her right in the face before she could object. She inhaled reflexively, her eyes rolled back, and she slumped to the floor, her chin banging against the counter as she dropped. So fast did the spray work that she did not even have time to look surprised.
Aja!
He exclaimed, stepping back from the counter.
The poor lady has collapsed. It must be her heart's. Here, let me have a look.
Alerted to a possible emergency and wishing to be helpful, Barris pushed forward. I'm not that familiar with Ancyonian physiology, but there are certain bipedal circulatory and respiratory constants that... Kiakta moved aside, not listening to her incomprehensible medical jargon. He wouldn't have understood any of it anyway. Bulgan was already in motion. Another glance outside showed that the street was still devoid of Jedi. The Padawan had stepped behind the counter and was kneeling beside the fallen proprietress.
Her vitals appear sound.
She sounded a note of puzzlement.
I don't think it's serious. Perhaps only a fainting spell.
She started to rise.
A little cool water on her face, I think. I wonder what could have caused her to go down like that, so sudden and silently. Maybe this?
Thrusting the sprayer forward, Kiakta caught the female with a full burst right in the face. If anything, having two nostrils instead of the normal one, she absorbed more of the mist than would an Ancyonian. Her eyes flickered but did not roll back, and she started to reach for the lightsaber slung at her waist. Startled and beginning to panic, Kiakta squirted her again, and then a third time, before she finally went down.
Hurry, hurry!
Trying to divide his attention between the entrance and the now unconscious Padawan, he struggled with Bulgan to stuff the human female into the unbreakable sack they had brought with them. Finally lifting their bagged burden, which proved surprisingly heavy, they hurried toward the rear entrance. Aldous was with them. The dirty service alley was deserted. Remembering to finger the signaling device at his side, he led the way toward Jarul Street, the shielded and secure apartment waiting there, and safety. Excitement rose within him. They'd done it. Now all they had to do was hold on to their captive, keep her alive and well, and await further instructions from Sower. Compared to the abduction they had just carried out, such talk work struck Kiakta as not work at all. No one questioned the contents of the lumpy sack the two Alwari lugged down alleys and back streets. Business was business. The Nomad's business was none but his own. Luminara put down the beautifully enameled little mirror that had been cut from a single reflective mineral surface and looked around, frowning. Something didn't feel right. Something didn't feel normal. It took her a moment of searching, with both eyes and mind, both within and without, to realize what it was. She had not seen Barriss in some time. Where had the Padawan gone? Kenobi took notice of her concern and moved to stand next to his colleague. Something amiss, Luminara? I don't see Barriss, Obi-Wan. She usually hangs on my every word, as well as on those of whomever I happen to be with at the time. He smiled reassuringly. Then it's not surprising she's off somewhere. We've both been pretty quiet here these last few moments. Last time I saw her, Anakin put in, she was looking at wood carvings in a shop. Though he did not reach for his weapon, his natural protective instinct was instantly aroused. Luminara's deep blue eyes met his. Which shop? She demanded. Not to worry, Master, Anakin told her. I've kept an eye on the entryway ever since she stepped inside. She hasn't come out. Hasn't come out this way, you mean? It's probably nothing, and she dislikes it when I act more like a mother than a teacher, but Barriss absorbs and files sights very quickly. It's not like her to linger. Her eyes bored into the Padawan's. Which shop? She reiterated. Sensing the seriousness in her manner, Anakin put aside any remaining vestige of flippancy, raised a hand, and pointed. That one, over there. He followed close behind the two Jedi as they walked rapidly toward the establishment he'd identified. The door was propped open, which was not surprising. No one acknowledged their entrance, which was. Barriss? Luminara's anxiety rose as she moved rapidly through the shop, searching among the larger wood carvings that crowded the back. A shout redirected her exploration. Luminara! It was Obi-Wan. That in itself was alarming because she had already noticed that he hardly ever raised his voice. Over here! He was cradling the head of the elderly Ancyonian female against his right leg. Her large eyes, the color of fine claret, blinked open moments later.
Goodness me! By Nomgon's arm!
She studied the alien human faces, gazing worriedly down at her.
Who are you people? What happened to me?
Using her hands to push herself into a sitting position, she added bewilderedly,
Why am I lying on the floor?
Luminara studied her fixedly. We were hoping you could tell us that. Obi-Wan and Anakin helped the proprietress to her feet.
This is my shop, my place. I was showing some wares to a customer.
One hand went to her head and rubbed her graying brush of mane forward.
Alwari, he was. Said he was Pangeus and wore the right raiment. But his manner was odd.
Her face added wrinkles of distaste to those shaped by age.
There was another with him, I think. I remember because he was ugly, and yet his companion made him look handsome.
A young human female, dressed like us, Luminara broke in. Have you seen anyone like that? The elderly native blinked.
Oh, to be sure. Very attentive she was. Though I suspect not intending to buy anything.
She smiled, showing sharp Ancyonian teeth.
When you've been in this business as long as I have, you can tell, even with different species.
Where is she now? Obi-Wan inquired in his soft yet commanding voice.
Why, I don't know. I don't know where any of them are.
The proprietress looked down and shook her head.
Masters, out here!
Responding to Anakin's call, the two Jedi hurried to the back of the shop and out the rear entrance, whose door was now ajar. They found him standing in an alley, kneeling and pointing. The pavement was dry and thick with dust. The marks of the two sets of footprints were clear to see. Thank the Force, Obi-Wan thought, for the absence in the back alley of a muddling breeze.
Ancyonian footprints.
Luminara looked up, glancing both ways down the alley.
By themselves, confirmation of nothing.
She indicated the numerous other prints that marred the avenue's dusty coating.
Many feet have recently trod this path.
But these begin right from the doorway, Anakin argued. And see how deep they are compared to some of the others. Three go into the shop, two come out, and neither of those sets human. Obi-Wan was nodding approvingly.
You are learning to see beyond the obvious, Anakin.
Would that you always continue to do so. Luminara had shut her eyes tightly. Now they opened anew.
I cannot sense her presence anywhere. If she has been taken, I should be able to detect her distress. But there is nothing.
She might be unconscious. Obi-Wan had moved farther out into the alley, the better to scan its most distant reaches. If the two locals who took her intended her ill, they might have used the same method to knock her out that they used on the owner of the shop.
Or she might be dead, Anakin pointed out.
In another setting, among other people, his comment could have provoked angst or outrage. Neither Luminara nor Obi-Wan reacted, however. As Jedi, they were not offended by objectivity, no matter how sensitive the subject.
Obi-Wan, do you think the same people as those who were assaulting Master Luminara and Padawan Barriss when we arrived are behind this? Anakin wondered.
Impossible to say, the Jedi Knight replied. There are so many factions opposing one another on this world that it could be the work of any one of them. And as you know, there are off-world interests at work here as well. In his quiet way, Anakin saw, Obi-Wan Kenobi was more than a little displeased.
This is all we need, to add heat to a flashpoint.
But politics aren't important now. What matters is finding Barriss. He did not add alive and well. He did not have to.